You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 494. We're getting a little bit of a late start tonight because we were talking about booze. But what are we going to do on this episode? Talk about booze and records. Let's roll.
Drink booze.
Back to Punk News Podcast, episode 494. Adam White, what's your booze situation right now? How are you feeling booze-wise?
Booze-wise, we have half an order from the Brimstone Brewery out in Fort Erie, Ontario area there. It's sitting upstairs, and specifically Ridgeway, I guess, Ontario. We also have an order from the Bench Brewery, which is out in the Beansville Bench area, so that's upstairs. That was a gift from our anniversary, and right now I'm drinking a 10-year old tawny port from Taylor Fladgate that I absolutely did not buy but was somehow on our wine rack. And I'm not a port guy, because I don't think you can be a port guy unless you're some sort of unless you're like a— who's a port guy? Like, yeah, I figure you have to have a big mustache and be British. That's how you're a port guy. I'm not entirely sure. Liverpool Neil could probably tell us what.
No, that's if you're a pedophile.
Oh, shit. But there's probably like a Venn diagram that overlaps, right? I would imagine.
I bet you there is.
I don't exactly know what the purpose of port is in the universe, except that I have some and I'm drinking it right now and it tastes like wood. So that's what I got.
Tom Trauma.
Yes.
Booze.
I've gone the opposite route. I'm not drinking anything classy at all. I got literally a half gallon of spiced rum from Sam's Club.
Fun fact.
And the reason I'm generally a gin person. I prefer gin, but my wife does not like gin. She likes spiced rum. So I make myself feel better about buying a half gallon by thinking, oh, my wife will have some. But you know, her it's like two drinks a week. Me, it's like two drinks an hour after 9 p.m.
I could talk so much about both of those individual boozes, but I figure that if I did, it would just make John's hair curl. So I'm gonna hold it.
Spice rum, famously one of the things that contributed to Lee Scratch Perry going totally insane and burning down the Black Arts studio. Speaking of burning the studio down, you can always visit podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We've got a couple of interesting letters this week. This is from Zardoz, and here's what Zardoz has to say.
Is that right?
That's what it says.
Can you spell that for me, John?
Z-A-R-D-O-Z. Zardoz.
Wow.
I love listening to the usual gang of idiots. You are making my quarantine time somewhat enjoyable. I live far away from my family, so at least I have a familiar point of contact. I've been listening to a lot of songs on Bandcamp and Spotify and watching vintage VHS videos of punk and hardcore shows. Some ska too, but don't tell anyone. What have you been doing to fill the time during quarantine? Thank you for a new episode every week from Zardoz.
Huh.
Man, I wish I could fill the time. I've been working, so I like from home. So I'm just working on my job stuff. What's actually taken up more of my time lately is that we have come to realize that that teachers are really fucking important, man. Like having to homeschool our kids.
Really?
Like having to homeschool our kids sucks. We're not good at it at all. And just like my daughter is in grade two, and just she's decided that that this sucks, and she's gonna rebel specifically against my wife. And just every day that is just like devolves into a shouting match at a certain point. And then you know we get emails from 10 people in the education system that say, make your kid do this. And then we get an email from other people in the education system later in the day that says, it doesn't actually matter if your kid does this. But then we get an email from someone else that's like, but make them do the thing that we're not actually evaluating them on. And it's very confusing, and we're bad at it, and we're probably just making our kid hate us. So that's taking up a lot of time. It's not particularly fucking fun. So yeah, that's that. I can't really suggest that to you, Zardoz, as something to do with your time. I don't know. Do you have more of a leisure answer to this, Tom?
My kids are older, Adam. I'm sort of leaving them to their own devices. The way it's working here is if you choose not to participate, you won't get a grade or something like that, or you can't really get a lower grade than you had when school let out. But if you want to get your grade up, or I don't know. My only two kids, I have two kids in college, are done with the year, done for the year, and my my younger son is in 10th grade, finishing up 10th grade, and my younger daughter's finishing up 7th grade. So we probably don't have the same type of issues that you have. I mean, we have different issues. They want to stay up all night and sleep all day.
Oh, man, if they just went to sleep during the day, then that would just solve half my problem. But no, but how are you killing time during this quarantine? Because I feel that all of my answers to this are going to be like they're less dramatic than I want them to be, because you figure that, like, if you were to say on paper, hey, Adam, you're going to be stuck in your house for several months and not be able to go anywhere, you know, what would you do? You know, I'd love to have some romantic answer where I'm going to I'm going to take up sculpting, right? Or do something. And the answer is actually like, no, you know what? I'm kind of working through Star Trek Voyager. And I was probably going to
punish yourself, Adam.
I was probably going to do that anyway. So fuck. Like, I'm not good at it. You got nothing, Tom?
I've been going to work every other week, like physically going to work, and I've been listening to records. And my wife has been bored, so she's been keeping me busy with projects. Was that the question?
I guess, yeah. Just like
what am I doing?
We're trying to help people not.
I just finished a series on Netflix. I watched The Tiger King. You watched Tiger King?
Everyone watched The Tiger
King. John, it's pretty bad.
John, if you chime in as the one contrarian human that has not watched that, I'm gonna lose it.
I've always been pro engaging in pop culture as well as alt culture, which is why I'm regularly attacked on the website.
Oh, well, there you go.
I get to watch the Tiger King. I mean, I don't know if we need it. Tiger King depressed me in that it's all villains, no heroes, and I feel as though perhaps the worst villain, the least worst villain, gets the worst punishment, and the worst villain doesn't get any punishment. That's why
it depressed me. I agree, but I think it will ultimately. She's being found out. The worst of the worst ultimately found out.
I think she's kind of not that great, but I mean the guy that stole Joe,
the Jeff Lowe character, yes.
Also Doc Astle, whatever his name is, who's totally running a cult and is creepy as hell.
They're all running cults, John. Everybody who has anything to do with tigers and lions and these things, they're all cult leaders.
Listen, people, tigers and lions are awesome, but so are crickets. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't get the
John. You're not gonna have three husbands. You know, having crickets is not gonna get you three husbands. You're gonna have to do better.
Yeah, man. This is a great frustration in my life. In that, like, you look at this guy Doc Astle, who I think might be the creepiest of them.
Yeah, he's creepy.
Well, actually, so is the other guy, the guy that steals Joe Exotic. That guy's creepy too. But like, dude, he's like not a good looking dude. He's like so out of shape. And he's got like all these like gorgeous girls, you know. He's got people just hanging on his every word, you know. It's like, man, I can't even get like one person to agree with me. This guy's got like dozens of people beckoning his every command. Like, what am I doing wrong with my life?
John, you answered your own question here.
You should get a tiger.
Yeah, you need a tiger. Then it doesn't matter. You could be.
You should make bad fake country albums that you don't actually sing on. I saw a tiger. Come on, you can do it. Yeah.
Oh, Tom, you missed last week where we talked about the Offspring's stupid cover of that stupid song.
Oh, I missed that. I the Offspring are pretty much dead to me at this point.
This was not
actually good. They have been since Pretty Fly to a White Guy. What is that, like 22 years ago or something?
Yeah, this is not this conversation was not going to redeem them too. Oh shit! I just remembered something that I am actually doing to legitimately not go crazy here.
Yes. So masturbating? Oh,
no. So here you go. Now,
I don't have enough privacy.
This is, there are people in my house all the time. So this is the,
you got locks at your bathroom door, Adam. Come on.
this is the thing that I've latched onto, and it is only because I had these things at my disposal pre-pandemic that I could pull the lever on this. But and this is something I try not to gloat about too much on the internet, because I've realized that people that live in a city, and I mean a city by which it's like a real city, and you don't have a square of grass anywhere near you, but you live in an apartment and all that. They can't take advantage of this, and they have it far worse, I think, from a sanity standpoint. Because there's people that I know that live in Toronto right now that I would consider incredibly successful people. Like movers and shakers kind of people. People that the culture hinges on. When you need someone to MC a world-class event, you pull one of these people in, because they are that connected to the art world. But I look at them on Twitter, and they're just screaming because they're stuck in an apartment that is, you know, the size of my car, and there's no doors or whatever, right? Like, they're stuck in those kind of environments because they chose at some point that they wanted to live where all the action was happening, and not be some square stuck in suburbia. Now, as a square stuck in suburbia, I've a bunch of grass, so I've been like working in the garden a lot and playing out there. But what I also have is I have a charcoal smoker.
Mm.
And I've realized that since I have legitimately nowhere I am allowed to go, if I am going to do something totally unnecessary, like say on the first weekend in May, which is I guess unless you're a labor activist, is not an important weekend to anyone. I could absolutely sit in my backyard for 6 to 7 hours and smoke a 22-pound Easter turkey that I bought on sale after Easter happened.
Smoke a 22-pound doobie that you hand rolled.
That was also involved. The poundage was not the accurate, but yes, so, I could sit in the backyard. I could smoke weed. I could smoke a fucking turkey that I didn't need. Like, again, it's this household is me and my wife, and then a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. They don't need food, right? So what do I need a 22-pound turkey for? Didn't matter, right? I could sit there in the sun and just smoke a turkey all day long.
Yeah.
Which was just
You know what's funny? And I don't know. I assume you're going to be in the same boat. So, like, we're way ahead on our spring stuff too, right? Like, we opened our pool last weekend. And obviously, it's way, way too cold to go in there, right? But usually, that's like a Memorial Day thing, right? Mm. So we opened the pool. It's been beautiful weather. It's supposed to be 25 for a low this weekend. This is Michigan for you. I mean, it's supposed to be like record-breaking temperatures on the low.
Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. We're talking about pool maintenance and smoking.
Ice skating.
This is from Jeff. Jeff, guys, thanks for the show. I have a small request. You either play indulgent long art experimental songs that no one likes and only acts like they like, or obscure stuff. Wouldn't it be nice to play some hits once in a while? I come for the news, but I stay for the music, as it were. Throw us a bone once in a while.
I'll do what I can do this week.
Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Yeah.
Would some UK subs or even some Clash kill you once in a while? I'll even take Green Day and Rancid at this point. I'm just kidding, sort of, from Jeff.
I got a good song for you, Jeff. We'll queue it up here in a minute.
Actually, the thing I'm going to play tonight is a legitimate melodic punk rock song that is 2.5 minutes long and by a punk band. So there you go.
Really? A punk band nobody's heard of, but a punk band
right? Nobody's heard of, and the song is in French. But, but.
Let's roll it out, Adam. What do we got?
Am I jumping into this? Okay, here we go. So,
and talk about you've got a radio show too.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I do. Hold on. This is the thing I just want to tell people about, because this is going to be fun. So, I was contacted by a group of individuals that I think would prefer to remain anonymous.
Is it the Taliban?
It might be the Taliban. I don't know. But they
former ISIS.
They're anonymous. As far as, don't you wonder in these times of pandemic when the news cycle has been completely dominated by the super virus? Like what is a poor Taliban member got to do to get some attention? Like, they're just sitting there, you know. What are they going to do? Anyways, I was contacted by a pirate internet radio station that exists that is called Nowhere. And Nowhere has been putting together a bunch of weird and diverse programming from people. And they play these shows sort of all day long. And there's a new schedule that comes out every day with which shows are on it. And the shows can be about anything and everything that that you would imagine. There's someone that has a show on there where they're burning their way through like all of these horrible 90s compilation CDs and judging them. There are shows that are on there where they are let's see here what's on the list here. Here's a show where someone is reading gently erotic original fan fiction from the Law and Order SVU universe. There are songs in there that are doing kind of like more conventional, you know, interviewee kind of stuff. But there's stuff that's all over the place. So I'm in the circle, as it were, because of the Taliban cell that I'm a part of some of the people that are putting on Nowhere. So they came to me and they said, "Hey, you want to be on our isolation radio station?" And I'm like, "Yes, I fucking do." So I have a show that's on there that premieres. I don't even know, because I just made it and sent it to them, and I said premiere it whenever you want. So I assume it'll be out probably in the next few days. That is basically taking what I do over on Some Party, covering all these weird Canadian bands and stuff like that, and making a little kind of like half hour music mix where I kind of burn through what's new and what's cool and play it on there. And it's called Some Kicks, and Some Kicks is I don't know, premiering maybe Friday, May 8th. I don't know. It's very loosey-goosey given the pirate-y nature of this.
It's called Some Kicks, and you do a half-hour show.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is it like the Punk News podcast where you spend 6 minutes introducing a one-minute song?
No, it is mostly music, and then me introducing the music in between the songs. Although I've realized, and my wife thinks this is creepy, that when I'm actually doing that kind of show, my vocal cadence is totally different than this show. Where like when I'm doing that kind of thing where I'm announcing music and then announcing the next music and something, I totally fall into this like slower talking sort of like, "And that was the Constantines with this song, and I'm talking
about like a cool, you're like a radio ass. Skinny asshole. White, Barry White."
Yeah, it's weird. I don't try to do it, but it happens, right? Because I'm not talking to anyone, I'm just talking to my mic. Anyways though, that show is premiering. I have the song, I have the MP3s that I've been making of this. So I could very well just take these things and throw them onto a podcast feed and make them a podcast. But I'm kind of really into the idea of it like airing when it airs and then not being available anymore. So that's where I'm leaning with this. I may change my mind by next week and this will just be a podcast that exists. But anyways, it's a thing that I'm doing for fun to help kill time. So if you want to find out about this, nowherefm.net is where the show is streaming, or you can find it on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook at nowherefm. I think all the handles are nowherefm2020. So there you go. Yeah. Should I play a song? What are we doing?
Yeah. What's your song?
All right, here we go. So, Stomp Records out of Montreal, record label run by the Planet Smashers folks there.
They're French, the Planet Smashers? I mean, they're Canadian, the Planet Smashers?
The Planet Smashers are Canadian. Montreal had a hopping-ass ska scene in the third wave era. And the Planet Smashers, like, Stomp was their label. Mike from the Planet Smashers is one of the main guys there. So they've been just quietly just, like, plugging away, releasing stuff.
It's funny. I didn't realize, because Stomp always seems big to me, because they handle a lot of the Canadian distribution for like Fat Wreck stuff. I thought Stomp was really big.
Stomp at a certain point grew into a bigger sounding label than what they did, where like, so Stomp at one point tried to specialize and just say, "We're just going to do ska." Then they created a street punk imprint called Union 2112. And then they created another imprint that was just ska and street punk. And I don't know, they had three imprints, and then they at some point became the Union Label Group and da 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 da. But Stomp was like the brand everyone knew. So I think then that when the early 2000s kind of happened and the internet blew up the fact that record labels are necessary, it all just sort of got consolidated back down to the Stomp Records. And that's what it is now. Stomp has this like this weird marketing strategy with some of these bands that they put out, where if it is a French band, they will market it to the French market, but there will not be a whole lot of talk about it to English stuff. But then if it's a if it's a English band, then of course, like, we hear about it. So they released a record from a Toronto, kind of like, they're almost like a bar rock, hard rock band called the Anti-Queens not too long ago. And like that one, of course, I heard about from them. But then they'll release something like this band that I'm going to talk about. And like, I had to find it myself. So I don't exactly know how it works. I feel that maybe they think like, we're not going to bother throwing this French stuff at Les Anglais because they're not going to give a shit. But you should give a shit about this. It's cool. The band is called Le Mainsail. So I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. LES MAINS SALES. So it's a group led by Fred Jacques of the St. Catharines and of Yesterday's Ring. And he has got a four piece with a bunch of people that played in those like St. Catharines related bands. And some of the other Montreal area like skate punk bands, like the bassist is from Oakhart's and stuff like that. So they have a 10-song set that's coming out called Failures. And the whole lyrical content of the record is informed by the fact that in 2015, Jacques suffered a major car accident and it was all fucked up physically and emotionally and all of this stuff from it. So that plays into all the lyrics and everything that are on this record. Now, of course, all the lyrics are in French, so if you don't understand French, maybe you don't get that. But hey, it's a cool melodic punk record by a bunch of people that are veterans of that scene. So here you go. The song I'm going to play is the first single from it. It's called Person. It's out on Stomp on May 22nd. You can find it on Bandcamp and all that stuff. Here you go. Le Mainsail. Le Mainsail? Who knows? Well, the French know. But here it is.
Mainsail. And one thing before we get started, boys, I should have talked about this earlier. So somehow I got on a mailing list and I got this catalog here. And did you know that you can buy professional level CD burners and, more importantly, I guess printers, you know, for the top, like the actual CD, like pro printers for
You print right on the disc, not on the
Like a
paper label, yeah.
So you can buy that. It's not that expensive, boys. And I got to say, I'm kind of tempted to maybe.
What are we talking about, John?
I'm kind of tempted to open up my own CD pressing plant.
What are we talking about money wise? Or you not want
to? Oh no, I'll tell you. So it's a range. So if you want to be cheap, which I think I would not advise being cheap on this, about $800 setup. If you want to go to the full scale deluxe, $2,000. Which $2,000 is $2,000? But for $2,000, if you can reissue any CD you want ever, you know, I mean, listen.
Yeah, as long as you don't pay the artist.
Well, no. I mean, I would not do a bootleg operation. But if you just get like 100 CDs made, that's like $400. If you get 300 CDs made, that's like $700. You know,
John, so we could finally do our dream and reissue a nice version of 12 Hits from Hell.
Well, actually, you could, because you're probably not going to see over it. You know, but I don't know.
So do they give you?
With that, I have met my contractual obligation to mention something about dancing.
Yeah, yes.
Thank you.
Do they give you a TARDIS so that you can deliver these back to the era when people gave a shit? Or do you just have to like slingshot around the sun? Like, how does that work?
Listen, Adam, I remember back in 2007, everybody laughed at Burger Records. They're like, cassette tapes? You know, what's next, Wax Cylinder? Meanwhile, Burger Records, one of the most famed record labels of all time at this point. You know what I'm saying?
So let me ask you, John. So, you know, sometimes you'll buy a CD now from a band,
and yeah, it looks
really professionally packaged, but they're sort of like more like a CDR. You can actually tell when you flip them over because they have like they're like green on the bottom or blue instead of the silver.
Yeah,
the professionally manufactured ones are silver. So when you use this setup, when you're done, are you going to have like a silver CD that lasts longer, or are you going to have the type that's more like a CDR type?
What you're referring to is what's called silver pressed CDs. And I don't really know because I've got literally about 20 models to choose from. So I assume some are and some aren't. I don't know. But I don't know, man.
Because I don't feel like the CDR type hold up as well.
Yeah, it's true.
And I always feel like it's sort of an inferior product.
I just feel like it'd be kind of like odd. Like you know, I have my own cassette pressing capabilities. And it's cool, but they're not quite as nice as the ones made in the factory, you know? Yeah. And so I would love to be able to make like factory quality CDs. Like that'd be, I could reissue like all the stuff I want to reissue for practically free, you know, like.
Well, but you'd have to deal with the artists. I don't know. I think it'd be a pain in the neck.
John, here's what you do.
And I'll come help you run. In your garage, you need to find like a 1960s record press. And I'll come to your house and we'll melt the plastic down. We'll like have a big vat of like vinyl and we'll stir it up like a cauldron and we'll make records.
The problem with that, you're talking like tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm good for like a little.
All right. Listen, Tom, if you want to go partnership, we'll take Pirates Press head on and say,
I'll take that 12-hour drive to your house to build some records.
All right, listen, let's get to the episode. We got a lot to talk about today, actually, even though we're killing time. Two things I'm going to go pretty quickly, and I don't mean it disrespectfully. It's just there's not necessarily a whole lot to say about these things. Florian Schneider of Kraftwerk passed away. He was one of the two main guys that formed Kraftwerk. He left Kraftwerk in 2008. He's the guy that's, I guess, the taller guy, if you will, in Kraftwerk, along with Ralph. Florian's formed Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk has never been considered a punk band, but they've often existed on the periphery of punk and influenced a lot of bands. Famously, the argument was Devo first or was Kraftwerk first? And of course, Kraftwerk was first, but were they electronic before Devo is the real question. David Bowie, quite famously, was influenced by Kraftwerk and even has a song named after Schneider called, was it V12 Schneider or V2 Schneider? It's off the Heroes album. And anyways, I mean, like, I used to hate Kraftwerk just because, like, it's so, like, boop, 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 robots, boop, 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 robots. But then it eventually hit me, and I freaking loved Kraftwerk. He was 73, passed away from cancer. So it's sad. It's sad, but at least he was hadn't. And actually, it just goes to show Rock and Roll Hall of Fame still has not put in Kraftwerk. And listen, like, if Celine Dion or whoever is in, but Kraftwerk isn't, there's something wrong, you know. Also, unfortunately, Dave Greenfield of the Stranglers passed away, another band that existed on the periphery of punk. Stranglers actually developed right around when punk developed, but they were never quite considered a punk band, though they did play with punk bands sometimes. I think it's because they were
They predated punk, truthfully.
Well, they were around since 1973, but their first record came out in 76, right in the era of punk. And they were sort of marketed as a punk band and sort of not marketed as a punk band. And I think that was – I think that's because the marketing was actually established before punk really became a thing. But punk guys were fans of them because they used to play in the same pub rock scene as all the proto-English punk bands, if you will. But the Stranglers are an awesome, awesome band. The lead singer, Hugh Cornwell, hasn't been in the band for a long time. But the first, like, three or four Stranglers records are awesome. Aratus Norvicus, Heroes, and Black and White are all amazing albums. And it's punk-ish. It's punky. And it's, honestly, it's a lot more punk than stuff now. It might be considered punk. But the band always seems somewhat uneasy with that term. They actually seem to not want to be considered punk because they thought that was limiting as a description. Anyways. He played the keyboard very uniquely, and it's quite sad that both those guys are gone. Both of those guys are very important in the influence of music, and also that they just put out, like, awesome stuff. I don't know if any of you guys have any Kraftwerk or Stranglers memories or anything, but sad that they're gone.
I could never – it's ironic, John. I never really liked the organ part of Stranglers. It too much reminded me of, like, the Doors or something like that. It just didn't – I don't know.
Yeah, I liked the Doors, though.
Well, you know, I did too when I was a kid, but I don't know what it was. I never could get into the Stranglers, and I listened to them like more recently, like even a month or two ago. And I liked it a little more, but I just never could get into it the way I could, you know, a lot of the first wave.
It's UK, not quite
UK stuff.
That's the thing. It's actually fairly arty, and actually probably would have fit in the CBGB scene, but it doesn't quite have the pop of like Sex Pistols
or the Clash or something. Yeah, no, I agree. And as far as Kraftwerk goes, I can appreciate their influence, but I would rather appreciate their influence than actually have to listen to them.
Kraftwerk is great, Tom. I will not hear any smack talk on Kraftwerk.
What are you going to do about it, John? Come to my house and break my record pressing plant that I'm setting up?
That is not good social distancing practice to go to Tom's house and fuck up his shit. The importance of Kraftwerk has dawned on me, I think, over the past few years, if only because I feel like so much of the music that is that like on average is coming out of the quote unquote indie rock scene at this point is all post-punk influenced. And it's just, you know, one step at, you know, everything is coming out is influenced by New Order. And then you like step one back from there and it's like, okay, like Kraftwerk without Kraftwerk, then this whole lineage doesn't happen. Right. And, you know, more and more and more, you see these guys that were in like straight guitar based punk bands, you know, either going solo or creating kind of like weirder and wilder acts. And that usually means that they're starting to incorporate a bunch of synths and, you know, electronics and stuff like that. And doing it in a way that I think that reflects very nicely back on Kraftwerk's catalog. Because when I was younger and I was listening to whenever I tuned into a Kraftwerk thing and like, say like the 90s or the early 2000s or even it would always strike me as that, like, it felt too simplistic from a tech standpoint, right? Like these are too much just like straight bleeps and blops and things that are happening in the music. And it struck me as something that, oh, okay, I guess back when this was current, it was really futuristic, but now it just sounds dated. And that was the opinion that I held of it for a while. But we've gone so far in the direction of, you know, even normal pop music becoming just heavily, heavily, heavily electronic, but in a way that is really super artificial and doesn't give you any appreciation for the actual hardware that's sort of making those sounds. That now I kind of go back and I listen to something from Kraftwerk and I'm like, it's almost kind of like there's something that is sort of punky in the way that it's just like, it is, these are straight, you know, synth noises that I'm hearing that aren't trying to gloss up, you know, someone's pop career or anything like that. Like it didn't have this like veil of artifice that sort of falls over all of this like modern popular music. It was just like, no, it is in a way, you know, from an electronic standpoint, almost Ramones-y in that, you know, here's some guys with the instruments banging on them and making like the most base level noises out of it and starting to craft something new out of that. And from just like a minimalist, like nose to the grindstone sense of things, I have this newfound appreciation for Kraftwerk, because I'm like, oh, that's, you know, what they were doing there is actually kind of badass in a way. There was a video I saw the other day of like, of Kraftwerk playing to a bunch of like big haired, you know, late 60s, early 70s people. And the quote that I saw on it was like, you know, this was recorded, you know, X months after Woodstock. And you really got an appreciation for like how closely to the era when, you know, when everything was all like innocent and hippie, that they were actually making something that was, you know, cold, basically like fucking like art rock and synth pop and all this, like making something that like you could, then you could see it on the faces of like half the people that were in the room. In, I don't know if this video is from like 1969, 1970 or something like that, but like, you know, half of these, you know, giant beetle cut haircut people that were sitting in the room were kind of like bopping along, or they were clapping, and they were like trying to figure out like what they were latching onto in the song that was being played, you know, from the standpoint of participating in a traditional rock song performance at the time. But half the people in the room were just sitting there with a look on their face like, what the fuck is going on? And just from that standpoint, I'm, you know, I have a huge amount of respect, because, you know, they were doing crazy shit at a time when, you know, not necessarily crazy shit was being expected of people.
Tom Kraftwerk famously has a song, Pocket Calculator, which has the lyrics, I'm the operator with my pocket calculator. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator. I'm adding and subtracting. I'm controlling and composing. By pressing down a special key, it plays a little melody. By pressing down a special key, it plays a little melody. Tom, is that something about whacking off in your pants?
I don't know, but I turned that in seventh grade when I had to write a poem.
You did?
I got a B minus. No, I don't know, John. It could be.
Well, listen, I love Kraftwerk. I love the Stranglers. I'm sorry to
hear. No, we're doing good tonight, John. We have two masturbation references and one Danzig reference so far. Nope.
Well, listen, does that count
as a second Danzig reference? I'm not sure.
I'm sorry that Florian Schneider and Dave Greenfield have passed away, both amazing musicians. All right, let's talk about some happy stuff. It was Bandcamp Free Day, or whatever you want to call it. It's like Bandcamp Artist Appreciation or something, or Bandcamp Support Fridays or whatever. Anyway, last Friday, Bandcamp had a thing that said, listen, anything you buy on Bandcamp, we won't take a cut. We will give it straight to the artist. We're not taking a cut. This is the second time they did that. The first time they did that, they raised $4 million. The second time they did this, they raised $7 million for artists. And by that, I mean people bought $7 million worth of music off Bandcamp on Bandcamp Free Friday, which is awesome and which is excellent. And I think Bandcamp is by far the best music streaming device, if you want to call it that, or platform rather. Anyways, Bandcamp, I think, and meanwhile, by contrast, Spotify had this desperate response where they, what was it? It was,
you could donate.
You could donate to artists if you wanted to, which really was to support a donation platform that they developed. And so anyways, I just think Bandcamp is making all the right decisions. I think, listen, I prefer records to CDs, but you got to go with the flow. And I think Bandcamp is going with the flow in the most usable and also the most responsible and respectful of the artist's way. And I'm glad to hear people got $7 million worth. Artists got $7 million worth of stuff. I usually don't buy digital stuff, but I did buy a little bit of digital stuff. I went kind of crazy. Effed Up released two awesome things. They released Mixtape 6, which I think is arguably possibly their best mixtape to date. And they also released a live album, which was very, very good. I also got we'll talk about Rudimentary Peni later. But there a lot of cool bands put up a lot of digital only and a lot of exclusive stuff for Bandcamp Free Friday, and I'm saying it was a win all around.
This has been a double-edged sword in my life, because one of the things that I do to assemble the newsletter that I do, which is at someparty.ca, if anyone gives a shit, is whenever I run into one of these bands that is one of these kind of like Canadian underground rock bands that I'm trying to cover, I'll go and I'll follow them on Bandcamp because Bandcamp will email me when they release something. But then what I've been doing too is if I see a band that I like playing something important, like say they're playing like a CD release show or a record release show, and they've roped in a couple cool local bands that they're going to play that show, I'll hop onto those bands' Bandcamp pages and I will go follow them as well. And then I've built up this like several hundred band list of stuff, and I get emailed when any of these bands release things. Because what happens is because the internet has equalized everything as far as music goes, none of these small bands have publicists anymore, right? They're all just doing their shit on their own. And, you know, lo and behold, bands are really bad at self-promoting a lot of the time. Like, bands will just release stuff and, you know, maybe they'll go post about it on a Facebook page or something like that. But, like, I don't know how the fuck anyone actually learns that these things exist, right? There's no standard communications mechanism. So Bandcamp's emails have been really useful for me to actually, like, know when stuff gets released so that I can cover it and write about it. Well, whenever one of these, like, Friday things has come up, you see the rush where everyone is looking and saying, okay, we got to put something new out there for Bandcamp Friday because, you know, because this is our chance to get a few bucks into our pocket. So, like, every band is putting out something, is getting something. And if I look at my email, I might get one or two or three of these Bandcamp emails a day usually. But in the lead up to these Fridays, it's like if I added it all up, it's like it's in the hundreds, right, of emails. Where now it makes my life kind of more work because I'm trying to cover this stuff. So it means I have a lot of shit to sort through then. But you can see just the zeal for which the artists are trying to get in there with it. And maybe that speaks to how desperate some of these artists are to get some money in their pocket, not being able to tour or anything at the moment. But I don't feel that a lot of them would be making this effort if it was Spotify trying to throw them a bone, because Bandcamp like legitimately seems like they're trying to help. So a lot of stuff comes out that is cool.
The people I've talked to definitely tell me that Bandcamp is by far the most equitable and definitely the most, they take the least for fees. So my question about this, John, you said you bought a bunch of stuff. I didn't, because I don't stream anymore, because I'm officially, like, you know, the analog man. But like, if you order albums or CDs or whatever, were they also waiving the fees on that, or was it only digital? Do you guys know?
Everything, so
it was
physical everything.
Product too. Okay.
Even like t-shirt.
That's good to know, because maybe I will do that. I'm like I said, I don't stream anymore very often, but that's cool. I'll definitely.
Where jump I found it's been kind of useful is now, like, when I'm at normal times, when I'm at work, I sound like my kids. They use that phrase all the time. When things go back to normal, can we go to the park?
This is normal, dudes. This is normal now.
Oh, you know, my daughter broke my heart today. She was like, we were making a pizza dough earlier, and she looks at me in the middle of like this recipe that she's reading for me out of the book, and she's like, I liked it the way things were before. And just like let it hang like that. And I'm like, me too. So with the in normal times, like I'll do a fair amount of streaming of stuff when I'm at work. But other than that, like, I like to have physical media at home. But where I found the Bandcamp thing is useful is when, you know, some random project that you follow releases like one or two songs where the commitment to buy it is not going to be more than a couple bucks. But you're not going to be able to go get the 7-inch because there is no 7-inch kind of thing. And you're not committing to dropping, you know, $15 or $20 on whatever. Like that to me is like the sweet spot. So I have on each of these Bandcamp Fridays, you know, spread a probably pretty small amount of money out between a pretty large number of artists, because a lot of them are artists I like that are putting like a song out or two songs out or something like that. And I think like that's where I feel like I'm grabbing them. I don't even know what I'm doing with this material. Like, I'm just kind of like throwing it into iTunes and being like, all right, there it is. Right. Like it's almost something I'm buying without too much of a purpose afterwards, except that like, I feel like I'm somehow helping, but yeah. But I mean, to go back to your question, yes, physical merch. Absolutely. They're doing that through it.
Well, there you go. There's also been an interesting, additional effect of Bandcamp Free Fridays and Bandcamp in general, we are now in the golden age of archival material. That is, because it's easy to just upload stuff that already exists and there's no physical cost. That is, there's no physical cost until John G opens his CD pressing plant. A lot of bands, one of the foremost being the Slackers, are just putting up a ton and ton of archival material. The Slackers, between them and Vic Ruggiero and Vic and Kepi, literally over the past month have put up about 20 albums worth. I'm not even kidding. Like 20 albums worth of archival material. Mm. Live shows, demos, rare tracks, singles collections, just tons of studio sessions, just tons and tons of material. And I'm not a huge Slackers guy, but I know if I was a fan like the Melvins did that or whoever, I'd be like blown away and so happy. So I would say overall, the digital trend towards music has been extremely damaging towards bands and music in general and art in general. That being said, one of the silver linings is that there is so much archival material now just because it's so easy to put up and distribute. So that we are in the golden age of archival material, and I hope bands capitalize upon that.
I've definitely noticed this, like, in relation to the Friday thing. And I feel that, like, where it's really making something happen is with bands that existed in the era before these services were around, but not like, you know, I'm not talking about like 90s era bands, but like bands that were, say, like active in like the late 2000s, like, you know, like 2011, 2012 even, right? Like during that era when there was not a Bandcamp, but these bands like were out there recording and playing and stuff like that. You have these situations where like, oh, everyone that was in those groups have now like moved on to, you know, to either other bands or they're not in bands anymore or whatever. But you hear all that material still talked about, right? And, you know, you'll go and you'll see someone and they'll be like, oh man, like we're going to see Chain Whip play. But, you know, did you know that the guy in Chain Whip used to be in Nervous Talk? And then, you know, before he was in Nervous Talk, he was playing drums in this band called the Moby Dicks. And I'm using this as an exact example because it is my example. So, you know, you couldn't necessarily go and get, you know, the Moby Dicks, which was a band from Lethbridge, Alberta from 2011, right? You couldn't go get their stuff, at least not in like all in a singular place, unless you were out there, say, chasing individual 7-inches and stuff like that. Not to discount chasing 7-inches, because Tom has said that is a wonderful thing.
That is my hobby.
I do
yes.
not disagree. But what this Bandcamp Friday thing did is it got someone off their ass to go in and say, you know what? In my closet on an old, you know, zip drive, I have every song that the Moby Dicks ever recorded. So I'm going to go put all that out as a discography release because, hey, maybe we'll get like $12 from someone on Bandcamp. And, you know, I'm looking and, you know, it doesn't appear that many people bought this individual record. So I'm sure they didn't make a whole ton of money, but like it's there now. Like whatever it is about whether it's just like the goodwill that Bandcamp has created in people or something, but all this old stuff is just showing up, and it's cool from a music nerd standpoint. I'm a little bit worried that it's like desperate on the point of the artists, like, you know, like we'll give you anything, just give us some money kind of thing, right? Desperation aside, it's kind of neat. Like I feel that like I can go and I can find way more stuff from this, from like the era right before now than I could have at any point earlier.
Well,
indeed.
Yeah. I should get into some of the Slacker stuff, man. I fell off the Slackers train. I was the biggest Slackers person.
Listen, and it is Slackers mania right now. It's crazy how much stuff is up there right now.
Oh,
they,
John's
buddies at Pirates Press reissued their, which album was that? Peculiar album?
Right.
It really, it's a beautiful record. I mean, it's not really my thing, but even I can appreciate it. So, I don't know.
Wasted Days was my, like,
right, I'm not a Slackers
right in the sweet spot of my life, Slackers record. So the when I was smoking aforementioned turkey.
I thought you were going to say weed. I totally thought you were going to say weed. Didn't you, Adam or John?
I, you know, when I was smoking a big blunt, I was.
I thought for sure that was. And I was feeling
this is a given. When I was smoking aforementioned turkey, and slightly less from by the pound weed in the yard, I decided that the only thing that I could do stuck in my yard in the pandemic on my unnecessary turkey smoking adventure was to just mainline every Hellcat Records thing that I could. So like I started with Give Him the Boot, and then I did Give Him the Boot 2, and then I hopped off that because, you know, no one gives a shit about Give Him the Boot 3. But then, you know, I did some, what did I do? Like some early Dropkick Murphys. I did some Slackers stuff was in there. I did some Rancid stuff.
How about my old pals, The Gadget?
The Gadgets were on the I didn't do a Gadgets record in particular, but The Gadgets were on Give Him the Boot 2. Or Give Him the Boot 2, Give Him the Boot 1. Give Him the Boot 1.
They were on 3, I know, too.
Anyway, so I was just like blaring this stuff out into the yard. And I have like a big McMansion in my backyard. So they were out there trying to like get their pool ready. And I'm pretty sure I was being annoying because I was blasting like Choking Victim over the fence. But that was a big part of my of my existence. I definitely like there were a few times during this adventure where my wife would join me and she would kind of give me the side eye about like, what the fuck are we listening to? Because there's a few things that are on one of the Give Him the Boot records or another that maybe haven't aged as well as you would think. Like, I love those records, but I don't know, like the Buccaneer song off Give Him the Boot 2.
Oh, I like the Buccaneer song.
I like the Buccaneer song, but I don't know how much of that is nostalgia or how much it's just like if you don't have like certain people are used to like really heavily voiced toasting, like that, if that's going to be, you know, something they're not into. And my wife was, she gave me the side eye during that one.
I gotta say, man, Give Him the Boot 1, 2, and 3, perhaps are somewhat dated, but regardless of that, they hold up. 1, 2, and 3 hold up. If you ask me,
I couldn't care less
about those records. I'd never gotten into the comps thing. I'm shocked when I meet people that are like, "Oh, those fat music for fat people things." Man, that's how I got into this or got into that. I was just always a guy who would buy a record, like a full album. I never got into those comps.
Tom, however, and I'm not a huge fan of the Fat Wreck for Fat People CDs, but the cool thing about the Hellcat records is like the bands sound different, but they all got kind of like a similar vibe. Everything from F Minus to Slackers to Choking Victim to even Dropkick Murphys, it's got kind of a similar sheen, you know.
No, it's age though, right? Because like so for me, like Punk-O-Rama 3 was hugely important. Because I was in like mid high school, I was like early high school, mid high school. Like I was still involved in like where I first heard Punk-O-Rama 3. I was still involved with like Boy Scouts or something like that. Because I remember like we were in the backyard of like one of our scout leaders. Like we're in our scout leader's backyard, and we were washing the tents. Because you know, like if you get back from like a big camping trip, you were supposed to like clean and air out and hang the tents and stuff like that so they can be packed properly. So we're in the leader's backyard, and we're you know, hosing down tents and hanging them on these lines and everything to dry. And someone puts in Punk-O-Rama 3, and like I was of course aware of, you know, Green Day and The Offspring and all that kind of stuff because that predated it. We're talking about like 98 or something like that. But you want to look at like stuff that's on that record. Was it 3 or was it 2? And it was just worst. Yeah, okay, hold on. Punk-O-Rama 3. Where is it? Punk-O-Rama 3, 1998. Yeah. So, you know, pretty awesome NoFX song kicks off the thing. Next is the Dwarves, and maybe like the first time I had ever heard the Dwarves, but like all the Bouncing Souls, like, you know, Agnostic Front, New Bomb Turks, like it just like all this stuff. That when you're just like a high school kid and you're not necessarily being hit by all those things all the time was just incredible. But again, age, like I because when I got out of that era, like maybe people still make comps, but I haven't heard any of them.
I was shocked when I went to Warped Tour a couple of years ago, Adam. I was shocked at how many labels were still giving away comps. So I came home with a whole sack full of comps, and I've listened to zero of them zero times. And I probably will just throw them away.
Fun fact, you guys know who orchestrated Given the Boot 1?
Tim Armstrong?
In part, but who is perhaps the main orchestrator?
It wasn't John Gentile, was it?
Brad Logan of F-.
Oh, Leftover Crack. Oh, F-.
And Leftover Crack, indeed. Okay, let's see. We're running a little long, but we got some cool stuff to talk about, so we're going to keep rolling until we run out of steam. Let's see here. Our next story is... let's see. I lost my thing here. Oh, here we go. Our next story is a good story. Here we go. We'll skip this.
This is where John has a stroke.
Oh, no.
It's such a good story that we're going to skip.
I'm going to play a song. Listen, the people want the punk rock hits, so we're going to give the people the punk rock hits. This band from Copenhagen wrote to us, so I'm just going to play their song because they asked to play their song. This is Dungeon Days. They say, hello, we're Dungeon Days from Copenhagen, Denmark. We play melodic punk rock, and we just released a new single called Pray Away. Would you be interested in playing on the podcast? And I said, yes, Dungeon Days, we will. So this is Pray Away by Dungeon Days from Copenhagen. Stand a little bit, keep it constant at bay, just like a brain, you'll be well in your way. Take on and pray away. You can give a shit, I pretend to care, just as long as people know that you are aware. Let's hope they like and share. The next story that we're going to hit.
That seems like it should have been a Dungeon. It seems like that's a band name, like a great metal band name, isn't it?
Dungeon Days. Anyways.
Is it with a Z? With a Z or an S, John?
An S. Standard spelling.
Yeah.
The Fest has added a bunch more bands to its lineup. I was talking to some people in the music biz, as they say. I got to say, a lot of people are somewhat surprised and almost annoyed and angered that right now Fest is planning on going forward due to quarantine and COVID-19. I actually thought they have kind of a reasonable plan, but maybe not. It's tough to say.
Well, it's the end of October.
Well, listen, it's not my opinion. Anyways, so they added a whole bunch of bands. Bands added to Fest 19 include Gorilla Biscuits, somewhat surprisingly. Sheer Mag, somewhat surprisingly. World Inferno, Kepi, Mikey Erg. Catbite, Omnigon, Beach Slang, Frank Turner, Murder by Death, Comeback Kid, and a whole bunch of other bands. And I got to say, boys, I'm actually, depending on what the COVID situation is, and because Punk Rock Bowling was canceled this year, I'm kind of considering going just to see like World Inferno and Omnigon and Catfight and Kepi.
I would consider it this year more than other years, probably. The Gorilla Biscuits thing is big, but it's still, it's not, I don't feel geared towards me. It's not geared towards you either, John. It's
That's the thing is, like, do I really want to be around best type people? And I don't, you know what I mean? But
what do you mean? Hold on.
Definitely the friendship and whiskey crowd.
I know.
roll back a little bit here. Well, you maybe don't want to be around fest type people from the standpoint of, you know, you are not particularly going to lose your mind about, you know, a Menzinger's performance. The fest type people are perfectly wonderful people. There's nothing wrong with these people.
Typical Canadian.
What's wrong with the people?
They wear smelly denim jackets. They're smelly. They love the
weird, like, too tight of denim shorts rolled up to mid thigh.
Yeah, that we're talking.
Fanny packs or something ironic, Velcro shoes.
I think you are conflating like several levels of hipster into something that doesn't exist.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Listen, Adam, I'm going to go down. If I go, I'm going to go down and I'm going to mosh like it's like Cannibal Corpse circa 1989.
There'll be people moshing with you at Fest. I don't know you think this event is. The only problem with Fest, I mean, outside the fact that it, for all we know, it may be within the second leg of a horrible worldwide pandemic for which we won't have a vaccine at that point. The worst thing about Fest is that it is in Florida, and on Sunday you can't get booze after six, or I don't know what it is at all. I'm not exactly sure. It's bad. The one part where I realized that this is a weird place for there to be a music festival. It is Sunday night, and it's not Sunday night. It's Sunday night, maybe at like 7 p.m. or something like that. And we're walking down the main drag in Gainesville, and we're like, oh, shit, like what do we do right now? Because everything's kind of gotten quiet. And then from behind us, we hear this voice that's like, you guys got any booze? Are you able to get any booze? And we turn around, and it's fucking Youth Brigade, and they're just standing around, and they're like. They're like, Florida's weird. Like, where do we go? And we're like, we don't have any either.
And you always keep a bottle of Percocets with you, Adam.
It's like, we're just standing there looking at Youth Brigade, and Youth Brigade's looking at us, and we're like, sorry. Like, this could have been a point in our lives where punk news was really cool, and we rescued Youth Brigade by having, like, secret whiskey or something like that, but we didn't. We were dry like everyone fucking else at that point. So
do you think that's the reason that I detect there was a slight animosity from the Youth Brigade camp towards punk news these days?
Because we didn't have whiskey on a Sunday night walking down the streets of Gainesville in 2000 and I don't know, whatever.
Couldn't have anything to do with their like constant like fighting about punk rock bowling, right, John?
No, man. We used to be like punk rock bowling.
But there's been some bad blood about that specifically.
No, honestly, there hasn't been bad blood. I wouldn't say it's bad blood. It's we used to be big, big sponsors of punk rock bowling. We say it's great, it's awesome. And every year the news got tighter and they said, no, we want you to do this, you know, and no, we're only going to give you 3 passes, not 4. We're only going to give you 2 passes. You can't get any club. It seemed as though they didn't want us there. And so I don't know if that's bad blood. I would say mildly.
Or they figured we covered either way. And
you know what? It was just like there was a time and place where we went to punk rock bowling every year. But it was like it was a different crew at Punk News. It was a different crew at BYO. Like this is when Julie used to be BYO's press person. Like we were super tight with her and with all the stuff that they put out. We were covering like a lot of their bands, you know, quite heavily. This is the time when like the BYO split series was happening and they were releasing records from the briefs and stuff like that. Like we were pretty tight with that whole crew. And then, you know, the BYO had some turnover, I'm sure. And Punk News definitely had a ton of turnover from them. And punk rock bowling kind of grew into like a legitimate music festival from just being like a thing where we went to bowl. And no, I don't fault them for it. It's just that, like, you know, people get older, they grow apart.
Adam, you raise a larger point. I don't know how deep you want to get into it. I mean, I'm always down to get deep into this conversation. I feel as though Punk News isn't really tight with any label these days. And in part, that's because I'm constantly waging a war against those connections, because I feel as though many other websites are basically unpaid PR, which is my crusade in the last 3 years has been, no, we are not unpaid PR. We are news and reviews and interviews. We are not PR. Maybe that's a bad thing, Adam. What do you think? Or Tom?
I think John is the Richard Nixon of punk editors, because he has an enemies list, and it just happens to be the most prominent figures in punk.
I have a talking out of both sides of my mouth part of this, and this is going to be the most name-droppy thing that I have ever done, and I apologize to everybody.
You go ahead and take your time, Adam. I'm going to go ahead and go on Discogs and hunt for some 7 inches.
So back in the era when punk news was young, when punk rock bowling was young, when all these things were young, and there were not a ton of people that were out there doing stuff that we did. So you didn't have, like, there was no Vice, right? And by extension, there was no Noisy. There was no Brooklyn Vegan. There were no other outlets that were doing the kind of stuff that we were doing. It was like, it was punk news. And then it was, you know, it was punkrocks.net and Paste Punk and punk updates. And like, you know, like a handful of other punk blogs, like, of which all of them, we, for some reason, were the big one. And at the same point, you had like Absolute Punk and stuff like that was catering to a different stripe of the music universe than we were, really. So during that era, the world felt smaller for us. So we, the 1 year, like the most spectacular, this is the most spectacular experience of it, totally fucking surreal for me. I'm sure that like I blew every opportunity I had to make an impression on people during this time, but just it was amazing to me, which was that. So we went down to punk rock bowling 1 year, and this was a year where we didn't pay for a meal. Where the one night we went out for sushi at the Hard Rock Hotel with Fat Records, which at the time was Mike and Vanessa and Toby was still working for them then, Toby from Red Scare, and I think Floyd was even still with them at that point. And so like, so the four or five of us that were there from Punk News, we were fucking babies at that. Like, when I look back at it, like, look, we were children for all intents and purposes, as far as like understanding how to be cool. Right. So we went out for sushi with Fat Mike at this restaurant where fucking Mike sat down and he covered the bill from what we were ordering, and we just let him order. Like, Mike ordered the food because he knew what we were doing, and we were such little babies that were like, we couldn't even like adequately like figure out what the order was. So we're like, you order for the table, Mike, and Mike just like did his thing, right? And then like the next night, same sort of deal, where we went out for this crazy was it Japanese or something like that with Louis Posen from Hopeless Records took us out the next night, and we were like hanging out with them all the one night, and none of it ever felt to us like, we never felt like we were being buttered. Like we never felt like they were like, oh, we got to show Punk News a good time so we can get in the news. And I'm sure there was an aspect of it. Like, I'm sure that whole bill got written off to someone's marketing budget or whatever. Right. Like, I'm not blind to that, but you'd hang out with these people, and at the time, like, it never felt cynical. Like, it always felt like, you know, it felt like you had these handful of labels that were being run out of California that were doing their thing. And you had us that were on the internet, and we were helping broadcast this shit out to the rest of the world. And there was just like this cool little, like, we're all on the same team sort of relationship thing that was happening. And like, maybe I'm older and wiser at this point, but like, man, it doesn't feel like that anymore. And I don't fault anyone for not feeling that anymore. I'm not saying that like someone needs to take me out for an expensive sushi in a casino or anything. I'm just saying that the world's evolved and become bigger since that point. And it's just like that just doesn't seem to exist between anybody. And I mean, a big part of that is that like, I don't think there's money flowing around in the same way that it was in those days. Right. People weren't like banging down the door to buy, thrice CDs or anything or whatever Hopeless would have been making their money off of back in the day. Right. Like that's just not the world that we live in. So this is all like was this pre-Napster even? Like, fuck. I mean, it probably wasn't pre-Napster, but it was pre-something, right? It was like pre-the internet wrecking things. And it was still when kind of like the internet had some promise to it. And I look back at all that time and I'm like, all that shit was amazing. And it's like just burned into my memory as like, wow, like it was really cool just being there. Even though I don't feel like I contributed all that much to any of those experiences, but like I was there for a lot of that stuff and it was really cool. But I don't know. It's not there anymore. But now when I get stuff from publicists, like either this is my age or this is the cold, hard influence of John Gentile affecting me or something like that. But like, I'm always suspicious. I'm like, everyone wants something. Like a lot of the time, somebody wants something. They're talking to me. They're buttering me up because they know I'm someone that is going to help them get this from X to Y. And if they can't make me do it, then they're going to make the next guy on their list do it. And I don't know. It feels different. It feels different.
So I'm not the only one that feels that he's at war with the universe. That's good to know. That's good to know.
Well, unless you've ruined the universe, John, and I'm just like living in your ruins.
If my integrity is what ruins the universe, then what better way to ruin the universe? Anyways, listen, speaking of the universe and speaking of no one making any money and things being expensive and out of control, Gwar are re-releasing their seminal Scum Dogs of the Universe album, which came out in 1990. Scum Dogs of the Universe is Gwar's second proper album and is widely considered their best, or one of their best, and is also considered their defining album, the album that made Gwar be Gwar as we know it. The deluxe edition is record only. It breaks the album up across two discs instead of one. It comes with a cassette that has a bunch of demos recorded from before the first album, which I didn't even know about. And it has a bunch of other knickknacks too, like a slip mat and a picture and a lanyard and honestly other dumb stuff that I really don't care about. I'm all for reissuing Scum Dogs of the Universe as a nice thing. Only answer if you didn't look it up. Tom and Adam, what do you think the price tag on this sweet baby is?
It's like $100, wasn't it? Or over $100?
Adam, what do you think the price tag on this sweet baby is?
All right, so we got, what do we got? We got
two records, one album, a cassette, a slip mat, like a small booklet, a picture, a lanyard, and like another picture.
$200.
The regular edition is about $200 after shipping. The Mega Deluxe edition, which is the same as the regular edition, except for it's got splattered vinyl and it's signed, but there's only two people in the band on this album that are still in the. Actually, I wouldn't want this signed by the band now because most of them weren't even in the band then. That'd be like weird.
I was gonna say, are you sure there's two?
Two. Brad Dirk as Balzac and Jizmac the drummer. Brad Roberts.
But it also comes with a pint of Otis Youngers's jizz.
And so it's $300
fake jizz.
$300 mostly after shipping for the deluxe version. I'm all for Gwar reissuing it. So here's the question. Is the band just doing what they have to do to survive, or is this fan gouging? I mean, this is what I've said would happen before. I said, we're going to come to a world where the only people that can buy stuff are patrons, and everything's going to be super expensive. And so were this to come out 10 years ago, it would be a double CD set. The remastered album on one disc, the demos on a second disc, and it would be awesome.
Like
$25
or $20. 20, yeah.
Yeah. So these things are getting so out of control price wise. There's literally a payment plan to buy this if you don't have the money up front.
How are they really going to sell this, John? It's got to be. I mean, does he give the number?
They said it's limited, but wisely they didn't.
I bet it's a couple hundred.
Yeah, probably like. Yeah, I mean,
there's just not that much of a market for that. Even among Gwar fans, it's too much money.
Yeah, it is too much. It's definitely overpriced and too much money. But the question is that the band's fault or is that the market's fault? You see, and that's the question. And I don't have the answer to that. I don't. I mean, I'm a guar maniac, and I'm like, do I need to spend $20 for a cassette? And this,
is guar actually handling every aspect of it, or did somebody come to them and say, hey, will you license this to us for this? Actually,
that's a great question. For years and years and years, I thought Metal Blade owned guar second out, but that's not actually true. Scum Dogs is actually self-released by guar and then licensed to Metal Blade. The reason being they signed with some record label I never heard of that immediately went bankrupt. So the record label paid for the album, went bankrupt, and the rights reverted back to guar somehow. That's not how bankruptcy works, but I think that's how it works in real life, if that makes any sense. And so then they license it to Metal Blade. So this is technically self-released by guar.
Well, I'm not buying it.
Looking at the photo of this, it makes me maybe appreciate how useful, say, a singular released coffee table book of various guar imagery would be for, you know, the people. But yeah, when you break it down album by album like this, it's probably something that you don't want to spend a whole ton of money on. It feels like the same reason I didn't buy that Clash box set that had the big fucking cigarette with it.
Yeah, Adam, is there anybody that like sees these box sets and like, yeah, man, I want that slit mat, or yeah, I want that giant plastic cigarette. Does anybody want that?
There's always something.
Because you wouldn't even want to separate it, right? You wouldn't even want to separate it from the set to use the slit mat.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. It's like, what do you do? I'm always unsure of what I'm supposed to do with the weird little throw-ins that they do with these box set things. Like there's a few like little like 7-inch box sets that I have where there's a whole bunch of stuff on 7-inch, and that's fine. But then you go in there and there's also like there's a poster and a sticker and a pin. And I'm like, so what am I like, do I take this shit out of the box and use it for its intended purposes, which is I have a poster and I have a pin that I can go put on my denim jacket. And I can stick this sticker on my the thing that I stick stickers on in my office here. Like, do I do that, or is that somehow like ruining the integrity of this like weird box of tchotchkes that you've given me? I'm never sure what to do with it. I feel like it's like, if anything, I'm more annoyed to have all that stuff than if I would have just got it independently. Like if I would have ordered a record and in the mailing, they're like, here's some stickers. I'm like, yeah, shit, I'll put those all over everything, whatever. But if they're like, no, this is part of the release, that there is a sticker in there, I'm more apprehensive about doing anything with it, so I don't. And then it's just like an awkward thing that's in the slip sleeve or whatever it's in. Like, it's there. There's a band that I like that for some reason, like, they really elaborately packaged like a 1-inch pin and put it into the plastic sleeve that the record was shipped in. And then they spray painted something on the plastic sleeve. So I'm like, well, this feels like a package. So I gotta kind of leave it in there. I don't want to take it out and just like throw it on a coat I have and let it get rusty. Right. Like I feel like this all has to be left together. But it's just a
weird... Meanwhile, it makes like a bump. That yeah, it's a bump.
And so it's exactly. Like, it's a weird right. shaped... It's Ugh. Like you go to all the records that are in a row, curse, and there's just Adam, one that's curse. Like sort of pregnant because it has a fucking pin in there. And just...
That's a curse, dude. Yeah, I see that sometimes where you're like, you know, when I'm meticulously hunting 7-inches, be like, has the original sticker? I'm like, oh, crap. The one I got at home that I had the original sticker, and I took that sticker out and I stuck it on something that I don't have anymore.
I have a question.
Do
about
I need
this.
To have 50 Beer City Records stickers sitting around my 7-inches?
Oh, you're going to sub in a different sticker that then you're going to scam
I'm not gonna
someone.
That.
No. So here's a question for you, because I'm really curious about this. Do you, and I feel that this is, I've never asked this question, but I bet you there is like a religious 50-50 split on this. When you get a record, and it's a modern day record, and okay. there is a piece of basically printer paper that is an inch wide that is in the sleeve that has a digital download code or whatever it is on it. Do you keep that with the record as part of the release, or do you not give a shit about that thing?
Oh, you gotta keep it with it. Even if you download.
See, I'm gonna ruin your 50-50 thing because I generally try to just leave them in there. But I've also had them that have fallen out, and I found them on the floor later, and just like, eh, thrown away. I never cashed them in. Literally, I don't think I've ever cashed one in.
So I'm in the middle, which is that if it occurs to me that one is in the sleeve, I will, if it occurs to me that one is in the sleeve and it's just like nestled in there, then I don't think much of it. It's just there. If it falls out of the sleeve when I take the record out to play it, I will take that and I will stick it in this box that I have on my shelf that is full of them. And then I will never look at it again. And I can't throw one of them out. But on the other hand, if I was to sell one of these records to someone on Discogs and they were to come back and be like, doesn't have the digital download code, I'd be like, fuck you, buddy. Because that is not part of this. That's just some shit that they gave you. But so, yeah. So, John, you keep those. That is integral to the release for you.
I would say you got to keep every single, even if I get something mailed, some sent in the mail and they throw stickers in it, I'll take the stickers and I'll put it in the plastic sleeve with it as sort of a record, if you will. Not a vinyl record, a record of the transaction that occurred. Listen, speaking of records of transactions that occurred that people forgot about that they will soon be reminded of, let's do one last story. Rudimentary Peni, they're releasing a one-sided 7-inch single. It's called Wilfred Owen the Chances. And actually, what it is, it's just a re-release of a very rare Rudimentary Peni CD single that came out with Nick Blinko's book about 10 years ago. And the CD single itself goes for like $150. And so now somebody just put it on a 7-inch record, which when I saw this, it made me green with envy. And I was like, I could have been that guy. All I had to do was email Blinko or his handler and say, listen, can I just put this on a 7-inch? And they would have said yes. But that's not exactly true either, because the guy that put this out, he's put out about 14 records, one of them being a Zounds record. So he sort of worked his way up the ladder a little bit. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'm glad he got that, you know. That being said, it's just – when I first saw – like someone posted, Rudimentary Peni is putting out a new record. Well, not really. The song is 15 years old and it's been released before. The rumor is Rudimentary Peni still going to put out something? Who knows? I hope so. But we're seeing more Rudimentary Peni action in the past 6 years than we saw in the previous 10. So – who knows?
John, I have no opinion on your rudimentary peni flood of news.
Listen, people.
But God bless you for sharing it. I don't think
it's
a flood.
I think it's just a slightly more of a trickle than it was.
We got a 4-second clip of Nick Blinko accepting an award, and we got a re-release of a CD single that came out 10 years ago. So
that goes for $150. Wow.
Yeah, it does. Honestly, I wish I bought his book. His book goes for like $500. This is making me mad. I mean, insane on it. Not insane, but like literally like 15 years ago, you could go to like parts of England and his art would be on the wall and you could buy his art for like £15. Like, and now those things are like not affordable at all. And like, oh, I could have had a Nick Blinko original, like the greatest of all punk art. So that being said, over the past few years, I've been like a lot of punkers will do art and sell it for mega cheap. I've been buying it up just because I like it. And I suggest you all do the same.
All right, Thomas, do you have a song that you want to share with the
I
world?
Do. You know what? I want to play like a punk rock song that's super catchy. So one of the bands that I've only recently discovered, like, of course, a few years after they broke up, or a couple years after they broke up, was
the Sex Pistols.
No, yeah, sex, exactly. The Rudimentary Peni. Was this band from like the OC region of LA, you know, suburbs called Smogtown. You guys ever listen to Smogtown? I just reviewed their reissue of their album from 20 years ago, from 2000. Amazing. Are you familiar with them at all?
No, I wasn't, but I was uploading that review and it said, you've reviewed this before. I'm like, we reviewed this obscure record before, and we did like 20 years ago. We did a review of that record.
It was 10 years ago. I saw it, and he also gave it a very good review. And it's funny
What label was releasing Smogtown stuff back in the day?
I don't know who released the original in 2000. But the thing is, it was a great band, but I feel like they never got out of the OC or never got out of Southern California. and didn't like go beyond there. But Southern California is obviously like its own little world. And there's so many great bands from there that just never, you know, made it to Michigan or made it to whatever part of Canada you live in, Adam. Or, you know, the East Coast or whatever. So, but anyway, so I was listening to the Smog Town reissue, which was called Furors of the New Wave. That was their first album from 20 years ago. But at some point, one of the guys in the band died, I think, or something. And they actually renamed themselves as Gross Polluter. So it's interesting because they were like 20-year-old guys when they make that record or 25-year-old guys. And now they're middle-aged guys and they're still playing and still actually making really good music. So this is actually one of my very favorite records of the year. I will review it here when I get some time, you know. When I'm not just staring at the walls depressed, wondering what I should do with my time, I'll try to find the time to review this. But I want to play a song by a band called Gross Polluter. And this is Smog Town. Smog Town changed their name after the one guy died, and now they're called Gross Polluter. So now they're a part-time band. Their guy's probably my age, mid-40s or something like that. And they just put out a new album this year, and it's excellent, man. You know, it's heavily influenced by the surf culture, I would say, because it is, you know, Southern California, but it's straight up punk, no metal, no hardcore, no, just great, skateboard influence, surf influence, punk rock. So let's do this. Is actually kind of one of the catchier songs in the album, I think. Let's do Sleepless City by Gross Polluter from their album, The People Get What the People Get, which just came out this year, 2020.
Sleepless nights, turn to sleepless weeks.
And that was Gross Polluter. And listen, boys, it was a long episode, but, you know, sometimes you just got to rap. Sometimes you just got to jive, you know.
Sometimes you just got to have a little human interaction over the interwebs.
I was writing about Smog Town 18 years ago. What did the you fuck? Like
it? How did that make you feel, Adam?
I don't know how it makes me feel.
What was your impression? Were you a fan or no?
Well, I was on the Disaster Records beat because I was a US Bombs fan.
Oh, Disaster Records. That's who put out the original Disaster Records.
Yeah, so yeah, they were on all those like Old Scars and Upstarts records. So in 2002, I was writing, I did like the update on punknews.org about Old Scars and Upstarts 2002, which is the compilation that Disaster had out then. And Smogtown was among the bands on there. But Jesus Christ. I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, listen, right, boys, punk news has got longevity, and to every season, there. Wait, what's the phrase? To every season, there's a turn. To every turn, there's a season. Anyways, punk news, sometimes we're getting taken out for sushi with Fat Mike. Sometimes we're waging war with every publicist and label under the sun. And that just happens how it's going to be. Tom Trauma, any closing words that you want the listeners to know about?
No, I mean, I saw a tiger. Now I understand. So no, I'm good.
You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Let us know what you think about Tom's rendition of the Clinton Johnson Band. Adam White, let's wrap this baby on down. Should we throw fire on the gasoline, or should we send out the olive branch in Caesar style and then stab him?
Like in all aspects, or just in particular to the show?
Just pick a side, Adam.
You know what? Burn everything down, because they can't get you right now without breaking quarantine.
Exactly. This person, kind of person who's going to come to your house and murder you probably doesn't care about social distancing, Adam.
True. But I don't know.
I don't know either.